مرسي.
Is Hebrew as kind of crazy as adaptable to intent analysis, like the way Dan and Mandy are doing Greek?
Oh, not quite as much, no. But you will find some books that, especially in clause relationships and that kind of thing, they will tend to sort down, and we're going to get into a little bit of it here in the last few chapters, but into different types of clauses. And you see that kind of thing, but it certainly doesn't get nearly as refined as what we've seen there. There are some books that look at a little bit more like that, but it's not that Lambden doesn't do too much with it. Which book is it I'm thinking of either? Davidson, I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Davidson that gets into some of that, but it's not to any elaborate degree. For one thing, I don't think people will spend as much time trying to figure out so many subcategories. They're usually happy just trying to get to understand it. They haven't got time for all the refinements. Not that you probably couldn't find something. You know, a person might say, well, we'll take the construct. And we'll break that down just like a genitive or something in Greek and look at all these different categories, because you could really probably find most all those categories if you wanted. We've seen a few things about constructs, and especially with infinitives, wondering whether it was the thing in construct was the subject or the object of it. Or we've had a few things like that, but it hasn't been really. Well, I hope some other show up here. I know John's here. Got to spread the load a little bit. There he is. Okay. Did we do all of lesson 50 except for that? My marker indicates we're... Yeah, at the reading. We just started that, maybe.
We skipped over to lesson 51 when he came to the reading, I think.
Okay, but did we cover part A and B?
Yeah.
Okay, we did. All right, just want to make sure. Okay, so that puts us at the beginning of the reading then. Judges 14, 11 to 20. We'll finish that first, then we'll get into lesson 51 some more. All right, verse 11 then. Start with John. Be a short one.
When he, Jeroboam, also, Wayikhu, Shiloshim, Mereim, Wayikyu, Ito.
Okay.
And it was as there was, what they're seeing of him, or...
That's not bad. It was their seeing of him, or it came to pass when they saw him, is what the King James kind of does. But, and it was in their seeing him, or as they're seeing him. It's not really. Yeah, it's not the, it's k, so...
It was as as they were seeing him, you might say.
Yeah.
And they took 30 companions. And they were with him.
It's okay.
Kind of a strange idiom.
Yeah. They took 30 companions and they were with him. Yeah, it's kind of like splitting up something we would just say all in one breath. Okay. And verse 12. Eric.
Vayomer lachem Shimshon Achaza na lachem Hayid Hachita Im Hagel
Yeah, Nathati.
Lahem Shivashim Sirvim Ushilashyam Kali Four.
Okay.
And Samson said to them, I will perform a riddle to you, a riddle, if telling you, you will tell it to me during 7 days of the feast, and you will find it. And I will give to you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of garments.
Okay, good. This first thing that when he says, I will propound a riddle, you might put this in the cohortative, though. Let me propound a riddle. You got that comate, that cohortative ending there, and then the na. So, and Samson said to them, let me propound to you a riddle, and if telling you tell, or literally, or I guess the idea is probably, since it's a riddle, if you can clearly tell me, you know, if you can surely or certainly tell it to me during the 7 days of the feast, and if you find, and then almost have to understand an it, you discover it, figure it out, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of garments. Okay, so he's going to give them a riddle and see if they can tell him the answer. This is, of course, more customary in their day than it is to us, and riddles were great entertainment.
We don't use them that way very often, but riddle can be used as a verb, too.
Mm-hmm, yeah, the different
so that's
sense.
That's why let me riddle.
Oh, yeah, let me riddle you, yeah, sure.
You know, I did that because it's the same word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm honest.
Yeah, that's more of a pure Hebrew thought. Yeah, good, let me riddle to you a riddle. Yeah, because it is derived from the same root. Okay, any other questions or comments there? Okay, 13, Price.
Lahim lo tukalu lahahi li unakhtem li shalishi sadini. Who shall we see? Khalifa, Magadim, Wayomaru, Lo, Kuda, Hidaka, Vanishmaena.
Okay, Vanishmaena.
But if you cannot tell to me, then you must give to me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. And they said to him, tell your riddle, let us hear it.
Okay, so they bought the deal there. And this last word with the footnote 7 on it, of course, it breaks down with, this is one of those suffixes again, and it's a feminine one because it's referring back to the riddle. Okay. What's that? Yes, let us hear it, right. Yeah. Well,
it's not the common thing.
Yeah, there's no ending on it, so you're just gaining it from context.
So in
propound your riddle.
Wouldn't be that great either way, I don't think.
It really wouldn't matter too much here, even in English. Propound your riddle and let us hear it, or propound your riddle and we will hear it. Probably doesn't make any difference in this case. Mm-hmm.
There's not any plural ending on the.
Well, it comes from the prefix because it's imperfect. You got the nun there. You see, it would have been nishma. Oh, I see. Okay, yeah, we've got so many things now. Yeah, it's just if that nun is telling you it's nishma, and then yeah, okay. Unfortunately, we know of so many things now that it was simple back in the old days. You could recognize things real quickly because you didn't have many options. Now you've got a lot more options, and it's more difficult. Okay, verse 14, is there any other question there, though?
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, really. Yeah, you're going to say that again when we get to chapter 52. Okay, verse 14 then, Peter.
Vayomer lahem me haokel yasa mahal u me me'az yata mato vero yakaru le hagi ha khida shiloshe yamin.
Okay.
And he said to them, from the eating one will go food, and from a strong one will go sweet. And they were not able to tell the riddle. 3 days?
Okay, yeah. Yes, in 3 days. Uh-huh. To tell the riddle in 3 days. Okay. Just, it's literally to tell the riddle 3 days. So you might supply for 3 days or in 3 days or something like that.
Okay.
They were not able to tell the riddle 3 days. Okay.
Yes, go.
Yes, to go out, but you should probably translate it in the perfect. It's just a perfect form. So when he said to them, out of the eater came forth food, and out of a strong one came forth sweet, or sweetness. Or we probably want to make it a noun in English. Yes.
For some reason, I was thinking last vowel, and the name
dropped. Oh, yeah.
You will find.
I think one of the troubles we have with the verb yatsa is that the first time we saw it was yotsei. We saw it, we learned it first as a participle. It's one of those that was given there, and so you kind of locked into the participle, and that may be part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the yod is a prefix. You know, you might wonder if this is an imperfect with, you know, a hollow verb or something like that. Mm-hmm.
I think it's one name acting like a one yod.
Yeah, okay. That's a little bit more on the fringes. Go ahead, Eric.
What's the name of the prefix of the name is
Well, it's not a prefix there. It's actually a participle name, a thing eaten, a food. And there's a noun, food. Ma'achal is just a noun for food. And it's derived from a participle from the verb. I think you had it in vocab fairly recently, didn't you? Did you have it in that form? Oh, okay. That's fairly recent.
I thought it was a participle.
Yeah. Ma'achal. Yeah. Well, if you thought it was a participle, you're probably getting on the right track anyway. Okay, and any other problems on that? So I'll read it again. He said unto them, out of the eater, the eating one, the one eating, came forth food, and out of a strong one came forth sweetness, or sweet. And they were not able to tell the riddle in 3 days, or for 3 days, or just 3 days. Mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed reading in Hebrew, and you can tell a lot of times the King James Version, like the way they end the sentence here. They just forget about the present tense. It's just like they couldn't tell the riddle in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Like they expect you to
be
able to know what that means. But there's no reason. A lot of times they just seem to ignore the present tense.
Mm-hmm.
Various qualifying words, totally leave them out.
Sure. Yeah, they're relying again on their context and on the idiom and so forth. This kind of idiom of time, this way, just being set this way, is not too uncommon even in Greek and so forth, although there they usually use a case at least, and you've got a case function that can, you know,
very
pick it up.
Interesting the way that it's structured to this whole thing.
Yeah.
You get a noun, and yatsa, and a noun, and a noun, and yatsa, and a, what would be it?
The
same way, it's just the way it's beautifully patterned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it flows, and there's a meter to it, and then you start the end in just 3 days. You know, it's it sure gives you. I don't know how to put this either, but I almost get a. They couldn't tell the riddle 3 days. You know, it just it's got a certain sense about it that almost maybe an
like
arrogance in the part. Huh?
It's almost like an afterthought. They couldn't tell the riddle. They just stick
it on
in 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Well, it may be. There's several ways to look at a phrase like that where there's not too much qualification. Sometimes it can be emphatic, and sometimes it can be a de-emphatic. Sometimes it can just kind of tacked on. But I think in this case, because of the fact that that was the time limit that they had to tell the riddle, it may be they couldn't tell the riddle. 3 days. That kind of an idea. Okay, verse 15. I'm going back to John.
Vayihi bayom hashvi'i vayomru.
Mm-hmm. Yomru.
Le'esha shimshon hati ef
Ishek, Uyagev, Lanu, Pen, Hathi, Hida, Pen, Nishro, Papak, Wes, Beit, Hadik, Baesh, Hal, Halyar, Shenu.
Okay, on your Shenu. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not
be Yah Rishenu. Yes, right. Yeah, Hal Yah Rishenu. Okay.
Could be Yo
Rishenu. Yeah, it conceivably could, but Hal Yah Rishenu.
Doesn't have a meth egg in
there. Yeah, usually you'd have a meth egg if it was intended to be understood as well. This may be a Hal Yah Rishenu, just because of that. It is an infinitive, so I think it is Yorshenu. See, in other words, if you would usually see a methag if it was intended to be a comet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, you see the close, you know, it looks like a closed syllable structure, so you'll assume it is, and if it fits that, unless the methag's there. So Hal Yorshenu. Yeah. Well, only if you take it as a comet. If you take it as a comet's katuf, then that's what decides it. Well, that's needed. It's necessary but not sufficient condition, you might say. In other words, the schwa, what determines whether the schwa is vocal or not is whether the syllable is closed or not. What determines whether the syllable is closed or not is whether the schwa is vocal or not. It boils down to. And the schwa is generally going to be silent if the vowel preceding is short. But since the comets is ambiguous as to whether it's short or long, they've used the methag to try to tell the difference. And the basic convention is if the methag's not there in this ambiguous situation, then it's kamas chatuf. If it is there, it's kamas. So that's the convention, at least, that he's adopted, and that the Masoretes basically did.
So we've got Hal Yorshenu.
Hal Yorshenu, yeah.
Kerathem, Lanu, Hal.
Okay.
This one.
All right.
It was in the seventh day, right?
Yes.
Fourth and seventh.
Yeah.
Seventh.
It's seven.
4 days after the third day. And they said to the woman of Samson, or perhaps probably to the wife of Samson, beguile your husband or your man.
Mm-hmm.
And he will tell to us the riddle, lest we will burn you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You might just say, lest we burn you. It is an imperfect, and this pen is,
yeah,
you can translate it, lest, it follows, it,
yeah,
takes the imperfect, yeah. So lest we burn you.
It's a future anyway.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, no matter how you look at it, it's future.
Lest we burn you and the house of your father in fire, or
mm-hmm,
in fire.
Okay.
That's where it gets kind of strange. Haven't you called for the purpose of dispossessing us or robbing us, or the way I've got it?
Okay. Yeah, that's good. You might say he gives it, you've summoned us, haven't you? In other words, you've summoned us in order to dispossess us, haven't you? Or have you not summoned us in order to dispossess us? You know?
To dispossess us?
Yeah.
You call us.
Okay, what I have is, you've summoned us in order to dispossess us, haven't you? You've summoned us in order to dispossess us, haven't you? Just accepting his footnote down here. And
now, footnote 11, he's got, should be Shalom.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. He's saying it should be plural.
Yes.
Masculine plural, Shalom.
Let's see.
Or instead of the singular.
No, I think he's just saying that doesn't seem to make. He's of the school, you know, where you just change a letter and you can change the meaning.
Well, that halom though would be. What would that? that be a shortened form? You understand what I mean? Because it,
oh, yeah.
What would it be if it was what he said it was? How long?
I'm not sure now. See, it's not... Chalom means dream. Chalom, if you've got the interrogative hey, you could still keep the question. The lom, though, I'm not sure. It might be another noun or something. Maybe somebody check and look it up what that is. It doesn't ring a bell to me at all right now. It's probably something simple. But kind of curious to see what he's getting at there. Then he goes down and puts a footnote if you go ahead and take it as it is.
Hither.
Hither, okay. Hither. Chalom, hither. Okay. So that would be, you've summoned us hither in order to dispossess us. Well, there's nothing wrong with that except that the text says, hello. And
hello is funny, though, because it's that off, it's all of it, singular.
Yes.
Hasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or haven't... well, see, it'd be just have you not. In other words, it's the interrogative hey plus lo. And it's odd to have to allo at the end. But see, in other words, he's saying,
oh,
you summoned us, haven't you, or have you not? Have not. You see, just the idea is just have not. See?
Oh,
and then you're supplying the you.
Yeah, hold on. Wow. Never mind. Okay.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you were thinking of hold on. Wow. Okay. No, that's just you summoned us, have you not?
Oh.
And, of course, I'm going to prefer that since that's what the text says. He's just saying, well, if you just change that Aleph to a Mem, then it's hither, and then it makes more sense. But I'm not sure that it really doesn't make any sense the way it is. Okay, so I'll read it again. It came to pass in the seventh day that they said to Samson's wife, beguile your husband or entice your husband. And you could put this, that he may tell us, or just and he will tell us. Because of the imperative plus imperfect like this, it's often got this idea of do this in order that this. So you could translate it, entice your husband that he may tell to us the riddle. Or entice your husband in order that he may tell to us the riddle. Or just entice your husband and he will tell to us the riddle. Lest we burn you and the house of your father with fire. A nice friendly business agreement here. You summoned us in order to dispossess us, haven't you? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's the point. Just one each. So it's no big deal. He was going to have to, pay him each one. So he was pretty confident he had this thing won. And they probably figured, well, you know, we can figure it out with our great intelligence. We've got 30 guys. We can do it. Okay. You can see all the egos going. Ego considerations going. Okay, verse 16 then. Who left off? John, were you last?
Yeah.
Okay, Eric?
Tech, Asia, Shimshon, Elau, Batomer, Rak, Shinei, Ani, Velo, Ahav, Tani, Achita.
Okay. Oh, we got another clause.
Li lo igata va vayomer la nei le abi ulumi lo igati va la.
Okay. Translation?
Samson's wife wept upon him and she said, only you hate me, you do not love me. The riddle, tell the riddle to some of my people and to me. And she told him not. Girl probably then
okay, probably what you want to do here, there's a bit of a reversal here. She said, only you hate me and you do not love me. You have propounded a riddle to the sons of my people, but to me you have not told it. That would be the idea she's getting. You told the people, but you haven't told to me. In other words, she's She's trying to find out what the riddle is herself and making a pretense here. So, you have propounded a riddle to the sons of my people. Well, lo, you see, you have not propounded it to me. That's the pronominal suffix there, to me. So, ofi, or iti, ithi. Okay, and, okay, yeah, she... Okay, she do not love me. Okay, and then you have propounded a riddle. Let's see. Okay, Agitha, yeah, you've told a riddle. Livne to the sons in me of my people, will lo, you know, and to me not you have told. That's the way it's constructed. Yeah, and to me you haven't told it. You can sense that right from it. Yes, using all of her feminine powers, isn't it?
And it says, and he says to her, go to my father and to my mother, and not told, and not to you later.
Okay. Yeah, I've not told, and...
Supply a knot.
Yeah, you might either supply a knot or just make it a question, and to you I will tell it. You know, I've not told my father and my mother, and to you I will tell it.
I have, but to you I will tell.
Okay, but, yeah, that'd be fine. But to you I will tell it? Yeah, that'd be fine.
I didn't tell my mom that.
Yeah, okay. Now, there's several ways to express it, but you get the sense, you know. Why should I tell you if I haven't told my mother and father?
Going to the flavor of it in the beginning, what I put in it, also because of the structure of it, she said, only you hate me and you never love me.
Yes.
Because it's an adjurative, you know, you
can
take that
low. Oh, yes, that's a good point. Instead of all, it's low. Yeah, you never love me. Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And that would fit with the way, you know, I mean, that's
what you
would
do. Sure.
Never.
Right. Okay. And, yeah, that's a good point. And I probably would, I wouldn't have any hesitation to translate it, never. Because of the fact that it's low instead of all. Okay. So I have not told to my father, my mother, and to you will I tell. Okay, verse 17. Price.
Want tavka?
Okay, or just what tavk? What tavk? It's just a.
Yeah. What tavk? And she cried on him 7 days that the feast was to them. And so it was on the seventh day. He told to her because she harassed him, and she told the riddle to the sons of her people.
Okay. Didn't take her long to tell it to someone else. Okay, and she wept upon him or before him or something like that, something of that nature, wept upon him the 7 days for which the feast was. Or in other words, for the duration of the seven-day feast. So the 7 days for which the feast was, and that you got that Asher Hayah, you know, which was. So the 7 days for which the feast was, and it came to pass in the seventh day that he told to her because she harassed him. And she told the riddle to the sons of her people. Okay. Any other questions there? Yeah. Okay. Yes, I think it'd be the. Let me check here. She wept before him. 7 days for which. Yes, it's probably, yeah, for which it's getting to, you know, for the 7 days. It's referring back to the days. Literally, it's the 7 days which was for them. In other words, she wept the 7 days which was for them. That is, for the feast. In other words, the 7 days for which the feast was. The 7 days which the feast was for them or something. I don't know how you do it. Say it in English. But this is that resumptive pronoun. And the Lahem would refer back to the 7 days, the days. So English probably be best, the 7 days for which the feast was. Although that's not even all that good. Okay, any other questions there? She wept before him the 7 days for which the feast was, and it came to pass in the seventh day that he told to her because she harassed him, and she told the riddle to the sons of her people. Okay, verse 18. Doug? Midavash. You had plowed my heifer, you could not have found my riddle. Or if you had not plowed my heifer, you would not have found my riddle. Okay. So he even answers him with a riddle, almost. Okay. And the men of the city said to him on the seventh day before the sun had set, what is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion? And he said to them, unless you had plowed my heifer, you could not have found my riddle. Okay. Any questions there on translation or anything?
Just on that footnote on the sunset there.
Mm-hmm.
But is that a directive commentary at the end?
It looks like it, just because of the pattern, you know. All, and you got the penultimate stress there too. So haharsa, see, yabo is kind of go before the before something, you know, before it had gone downward or something like that. But it seems like since the word shemesh isn't there. You know, we're kind of having to take their word for it. Is that what it means?
They say probably means to be dry or hot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but did you find that? Did you look that up?
Yeah, okay. Right here. But, I mean, it's kind of...
Oh, okay. I think what that, if that's true, then probably the idea is before went away the hot or the dryness. That might, you might lose a directional sense to that, but that may be what they're getting at. In other words, before the dryness went, that is, the hotness went, before the sun went down.
It's hit you the still. Sun in a couple other places, but it's also, in a feminine form, it means pottery.
Hmm.
Maybe that which is, you know, fired.
Yeah, fired and dried. Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of...
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's one for a future study for someone.
It
does look directional, though.
Yeah.
It does look directional. That would be funny.
Mm-hmm. But that would seem to be...
That would be in the wrong end of it, though.
Wrong direction, yeah.
Although it may, you know... We can't say that the English is right, and we're making the Hebrew conform to English. We've got to... Okay. Well, there's something for someone to study. Uncertain expression, so there's probably not going to be a whole lot of data on that. All right, number 19 then. Who's up next? Peter.
What is love? Allow. Ruach Yahweh. Vayered. Ashkelon. Vayach. Mahem. Mehem. Shaloshim. Ish. Vayichach. Eh. Halit. Ostam. Vayetain. Ha. Halipot, Lamaide, Ha Pidat, Vayahar, Apo, Vayahal, Be, Avi.
Okay. Translation.
And the Spirit of God rushed upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon, and he spoke of them. 30
men. Mm-hmm. And he took
their armor.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see the next line. I guess that's all I wrote down. I have verse 20.
Oh, okay. You cut it off there. Okay, he took their armor.
I knew there was, I had that 20 there, and I thought, uh-oh. Okay. So 7, right there. And he gave his foot. Gave
these are those changes
armor,
of clothes.
To is that a what's the name? Is that a
yeah, it's well, it's the part. It's a participle. Yeah.
The ones he told the riddle.
Yes.
The ones telling.
Yeah, to the ones telling the riddle. In other words, they told the answer to it, so
oh, okay.
The one's telling the riddle. Yeah, it's just a hifyel participle.
Oh, they were angry.
Yeah. His nostrils were inflamed or something. Yeah, he was angry.
Oh,
it's his nose. In other words, there was anger to his nose.
There was anger to his nose. And he went up to...
Mm-hmm. You almost have to understand the two here. Yeah, he went up to the house of his father. You almost have to put a two in there. Just because of the verb, it's got the idea of a direction anyway. Okay. And the Spirit of Yahweh rushed upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon, and he smote 30 of them 30 men, and took their armor, and gave the changes. This next word is different than armor, so it looks similar, but it's gave the changes of clothing, whatever, to the ones telling the riddle. And he was angry. He went up to the house of his father. So that's how he fulfilled the riddle. He just went and killed 30 of their men and gave them the clothes from them. Okay. Moral of the story, don't get into riddles. It is really amazing how seriously they took those things, though. I mean, both on both sides. The other way, we're going to say, you know, you tell us or we'll kill you, you know, burn the house of your father and so forth. And then when they tell the riddle, he goes and kills 30 men just to answer it. A strange way to live. Okay, verse 20. John, finish up.
Watahi, Isha, Shimshon, Lemere, Mere, Asher, Re'ab.
Okay, don't usually see three series in a row like that.
Yeah. that first pronunciation, that would be a Dag Yesh Forte, right?
On which letter? Oh, right at the beginning? Yeah, it is because of the, well, consecutive. You almost have to.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Watahi.
Watahi instead of
Watahi. Yeah.
And Samson's wife was possessed by or was given to his companion, which was best man to him.
Yes. Okay. And Samson's wife, or the wife of Samson, became his companion's wife, who was best man to him. Okay. Interesting way to end things. All right.
The word given is divide, right?
I
said his wife was.
Yeah. To he is just a became. So, yeah, and the wife of Samson became his companion's wife, who was best man to him.
The verb to be is understood.
Yeah, the verb to be is understood in the second clause, and it's there in the first clause, the very first word. But it's, you see, well, let's see.
Samson's wife, she was.
Yeah, Samson's wife was to his companion.
Was to, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Was, or became.
Became, yeah. The idea of to be to something is where you get the became idea. Okay. So, yeah, the wife of Samson became his companions. And the word wife isn't repeated there. It was just... Okay, so be it. Lesson 51. How far did I get? Did I get any discussion of this at all, or did we just stop? Okay, I can't remember because I've gone through this several times in my mind and so forth. I can't remember whether... I didn't put a marker down. So, did we talk about call passive or anything?
We talked about it. General.
Okay, so just want to make sure. Let me give you the assignment for 51, though, just ahead of time, so that, and we won't necessarily, I don't think we'll get through this chapter, I'm sure we won't get through this chapter in the time remaining, so this isn't formally for tomorrow, but this will tell you what we're looking for, and we'll probably get started with, you might want to do A and B or so, and you know, fool around with it a little bit. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. A, under part A, do number 1, number 8, number 14, and you got a new number 15. Okay? So 1, 8, 14. That's what I was going to give you when I saw 15. I figured we had to do that. So we got 666 twice there. Okay, and then part B, do number 1, 7, and 12. 1, 7, and 12 for part B. And for part C, number 1, 8, and 16. 1, 8, and 16 for part C, and then the reading, all of that. Yeah, that's a long one. 18 verses. Samuel and Eli. Yeah, the verses, most of the verses are fairly short, though. That'll help. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this one's a little bit more edifying than the riddle one. A little more spiritual than that last one, than the riddle. Okay. So lesson 51 is kind of a catch-all for loose ends on this concept of derived verbs. The first section, 179, is dealing with something that's called call passive. And the idea is, this is kind of a debatable area. We've got some forms that are variably classified by different grammarians. And so he's taking the view that there are several forms taken by the Masoretes as pu'al or ho'fal, which must rather be viewed as survivors of an obsolete passive of the call. Well, this is the opinion that they're holding now. Of course, others would disagree, but you'll see the reasons why he's claiming that. And I'm not so sure. I don't really care whether you take it as a pu'al and a ho'fal combination or as a call passive. The main point is just to get the meaning of it. These forms are rare. They're not used very frequently, and they don't have a full paradigm. So it's just a matter of, it doesn't really matter to me what you classify them as. He's got some attested forms here. In the perfect, we've got lukach, and the imperfect, yukach, of the same verb, to be taken. There's a perfect form, yulav, to be born, and there's an imperfect form, yutan, to be given. And so he's claiming that these are an obsolete passive of a call. Isolated participial forms occur, ukal, eaten, consumed, and yulav, or yulov, to be born. that these verbs are not pu'al or ho'fal types. See, the pu'al would be the obvious guess because of the form, u'ah. But that these verbs are not pu'al or ho'fal types, and in the imperfects they might be considered ho'fals or perhaps. It's suggested, one, by the absence of a corresponding pi'al or hi'fal active verb in the appropriate, with the appropriate meaning. Well, that can't be a critical argument in the fullest sense, because there are verbs that they have pi'al but no calls, and, you know, and the hi'fals but nothing else, and that kind of thing happens. Secondly, by the absence of a maim preformative on the few remaining participial forms. And, of course, that would be a pretty good consideration, except that another person could come along and say, those aren't participial forms, those are just nouns, and we're just going to take them that way or something. So, I mean, it gets to be a fuzzy area. And thirdly, by the irregular assimilation of the lamad in yukach, a special feature of the call not found elsewhere. So in other words, he's saying we do see lamas assimilated in the call, but we don't see them in the other derived verbs. And since we see that here, he's claiming that this is probably a call. That in itself could not be a strong argument, though, because the fact that you don't see them anywhere else, another person might come along and say, we only see them here. And, you know, we've seen enough exceptions where it's awful hard to make a rule. But he's putting all this together, and this is his deduction. And he may be right, but it's not a, you know, black and white situation. Then fourth, by the asymmetry of a pu'al perfect and a ho'fal imperfect. In other words, if you're going to call these from the same verb, his point is that the perfect form is a pu'al, but in the imperfect, you know, it keeps the same vowel pattern, so you almost have to consider a ho'fal or something else that has a similar pattern in the imperfect, at least some of the forms. It is quite likely that a number of other pu'al and ho'fal verbs belong here, but assignment on the basis of meaning alone is precarious, so they're just not willing to do that. In other words, they probably forms that look like a pu'al or ho'fal and don't have a lot of other forms, and he says they might go in here, but we can't really tell for sure because we don't have enough forms to judge the meaning and show that this is derived from something else, etc. So that's just for your information, that you may run into these forms. He's calling them call passive, and others may differ with that, but they're not real easy to nail down. Okay, then section 180, polal, polal, and hith polal. In place of pi'al, pu'al, and hith-pi'al verbs from hollow roots, there is a derived system of verbs characterized by the reduplication of the final root consonants and kolon waw in the first stem syllable. Okay, so certain hollow verbs, instead of having the normal pi'al, pu'al, and hith-pi'al forms that we've seen for these three categories, they will have a different pattern, and they call it polal, polal, and hith-polal. Because what's happening is you're getting a reduplication of the last letter. So the polel, the two L's there, is indicating a reduplication of the last letter of a hollow verb. And then they have a typical kolom waw in the first stem syllable. So this is, and they're just coining a term for these. These are, you might consider these as variations of pi'al, pu'al, and hith-pi'al used for hollow verbs. And that's about the size of it. The perfect, we've got some examples here for the verb kum that we've seen before, or just kam. We've got komeim, and notice we get another meim stuck on. And the imperfect of that, yikomeim, infinitive construct, komeim, and the participle, mikomeim. The polal form of that verb, which would be the passive. Now, the polal is equivalent to pi'al. In other words, it's the intensive form. And the polal is equivalent to pu'al, and the hith polal, of course, is equivalent to hith pi'al, as far as meaning is concerned. So the pu'al, or the polal, is equivalent to pu'al, which would be the passive form of the pi'al. In this case, it's the passive form of the polal. Okay? If that makes any sense. All right. And so we've got komam, just exactly the same except the vowel point in the last syllable. And your imperfect, yikomam, the infinitive construct doesn't exist, and mikomam with the comets there for the participle. Hith polal would be your equivalent to the hith pi'al. And so we've got hith komeim, yith komeim, and mith komeim for the participle. Typical verbs are komeim, to raise up, from kam, to arise. We've got mothaith, to slay or kill. And we've got romeim, to raise. Konein, to establish. Oreir, to arouse. From the roots, kum and muth and room and kun, I guess, and ur, I guess you would call it. Is ur that one you were just looking at, John?
That was ur.
Okay, so here we run into it already. All verbs of this type are rare, so we're not going to see a lot of them. Now, in the inflection of the perfect, the distinction between polel and polal is obscured. You see what's going to happen because of that seri and that pathak there, and because they're going to get in situations where it's a closed syllable and you get shawa there, and both of them are going to shorten down to shawa, the forms are going to look the same in a good portion of the paradigm. The third person form's okay. You've got ko-mame versus ko-mam, but if you look at the next form, you've got ko-mama and ko-mama, same form, exactly. And ko-mamta and ko-mamta. So what you have to do if you see a form like that, of course, is you look at the context and hope that the context will resolve it as to whether it's active or passive. Because the difference would be maybe she raised up or she was raised up. And you'd have to go by context to decide which it was. Familiar forms occur from geminate roots as chonain, to favor, from the root chanan, and sovev, to encompass, from the root savav. So you'll see a similar thing like the poleo, polal, or hispoleo types for those. Okay, then other verb types, section 181. Biblical Hebrew has a number of verb types not belonging to those already treated. Most of these are so infrequent that a complete paradigm cannot be constructed for them. Given below with the traditional name of the type are a few examples. Okay, we have poel. This is similar to the poleo of the preceding paragraph, but formed from regular triliteral roots. So this is a derivation that's coming from a regular triliteral verb that doesn't have any irregularities, but it's got this vocalic pattern and it's being used in this way. So we've got shoresh. Now shoresh in itself would have no difficulty. I mean, it could be just sharash. I mean, it's a strong verb in, as far as its radicals are concerned, the letters are concerned. But it's got this feature. It's OA pattern. It's very much like our participle pattern was before, except that it's got a different participle with a mame. So you've got shoresh for the perfect, the imperfect, yishoresh, and the participle mishoresh, which is, you've got that main type participle form. It means to take root, a denominative from the noun shoresh, shoresh, meaning root, shoresh. Contrast the PL verb sheresh, to root up, destroy the roots of. So there is an actual PL, and then there's also this poel form. And apparently it looks like what you've got here is two kinds of PLs being formed from the same root, one of them being denominative to take root, and the other one being kind of an intensive and got a more of a destructive aspect to it, to destroy the roots of something or root up. So that may be the reason why you're seeing it. In this case, they wanted to get two different ideas, intensive ideas from different directions, and so they went that route. Palau, presumably from triliteral roots with reduplication of the final root consonant. This one's kind of interesting. What's happening here is that you get the last consonant being reduplicated from a normal regular triliteral root. And sha'anan is one example here that they're claiming. Apparently we're starting with the idea of sha'an, and then we've got another nun in the end, sha'anan. And then another example here, to be weary, lao. Here again, we've got a closed syllable, and the other one would have been closed, sha'anan would have been closed, that aleph, except the aleph couldn't take shawa. But our pattern is amlal here, and it's similar to this palal idea, the double reduplication of the last consonant. And then pilpel, this is one of the interesting ones, perhaps traceable to a reduplicated biconsonantal, that is, hollow roots. Now notice he's saying perhaps traceable, because this is a lot. There's a lot of theory involved in this, or guesswork, really. But if you take a hollow root that only has two consonants left, and if you reduplicate it, you know, this is the idea that they're getting for. So kill kale is they're saying in effect that you've taken some sort of a root cool or something like that and then doubled it, put it down twice. So kill kale, and the imperfect of that would be yikal kale, infinitive construct kal kale, and the participle mikal kale. And it means to sustain us to support. We've got Gilgal. You get that word Gilgal rolled away and so forth from that. So there's a number, I think, the word for symbols and things like that, and making, sometimes there are sounds and so forth that are made, and they'll use this kind of a thing just to get a kind of a ringing sound and so forth. It's kind of interesting. So that's another category that you'll find. And the last, we're out of time here, but we'll talk about this last one here, this Hishtafel. And that'll pretty much wrap it up for that discussion. Now we'll talk about the numbers. You can take just a quick, brief look if you want to do a little work ahead on this and get started with that assignment tomorrow. We'll probably be into that, because I'd kind of like to go through this before we hit lesson 52. That's your object suffixes, and that'll comprise quite a bit of time. The next few chapters are going to be dealing with that. 52, 53 for sure. Yeah, 54. And then 55 is some more conditional sentences, and that finishes the book. So we're almost through the book, and we'll be into... We'll start with the book of Genesis after we... We're not going to go through everything in Genesis, but we'll start with something a little more familiar, start with some of the easier things, and then move into... later on, we'll get into Ezekiel or something, and then we'll really get our... after we get through the book, our testing structure will be basically translation. In other words, what I'll do, instead of signing these readings, it'll be responsible for Genesis chapters 1 through 3.
And will we have gone through those already?
Yes, right. Yeah, I won't give you anything on the test that we haven't gone through in class.
Definitely. We're not going to have tests like in the Greek, where we have principal parts.
No, no, there's really not too much to do along those lines that we haven't really done already. So it's just going to be, I might find something to throw in, you know, in addition to that. But that's the direction that we're going to take. Unless the Lord leads otherwise, that's what I'm intending to do.